Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and we're going to climb into the heavens again with our astral travelers and learn more about the mechanics of it. What goes on out there? What should we expect when it's our time to climb through the heavens, even if we're doing it in this lifetime because we're capable of astral travel, or perhaps we're just done with this lifetime and we're moving on? What happens next? Now, to tell us, I want to introduce Stephanie S. Darrell, who's back again with her son, Darren Knight.
Thank you, Peter.
Oh, thank you so much, both of you, for being here.
Well, delighted to be here again, Peter. I'm delighted to see you.
Oh, thank you. And so I'm excited about talking about what goes on, what should we expect when we set foot in other dimensions.
The irony is that most people are so afraid of dying, and when you really understand what's going on in the heavens, you lose all the fear of that because it's a very exciting adventure. Once we pass over, we enter the main body of the seventh heaven. There is so much to learn once you pass over. Some things are very similar, and some things are very unfamiliar. So there's a lot to learn and a lot to grasp. However, the basic things that are going on in the heavens are this. You may ask, what will I eat when I pass over? Where will I live? Who will I be with? What will I do with myself? So let's begin at the beginning. The beginning is, where will you be when you pass over? The heavens, more or less, as a generality, duplicate Earth. If you have lived in Alaska all your life, that's your familiar environment. When you pass over, you will find yourself in the same environment, because that's where you're comfortable and that's what you know.
Will you feel cold in the same way?
Not quite, no. No, it won't be quite that way. But there'll be enough that's familiar to make you feel comfortable. There are many choices when it comes to where you're going to live. You can remain in a home that you've lived in all your life if that's what you wish.
So there's an illusion of the house or apartment that you've been living in that is reproduced.
Yes.
And you can find yourself in the same place, but not with the same people.
You're not with the same people, though. No, that is true, because those people are left behind on Earth. However, you will have many family members around you, those of the other generations who have gone ahead of you. At this moment in time, my mother and father have passed over, my grandparents. Also, two of my sisters and my brother. So I expect when I pass over that they will all be waiting for me.
And some of us, when we pass over, might have relatives who we don't want to see.
Well, they won't be there. They're not invited. None of your enemies are invited. Only the people who love you
are
invited. Okay,
that's understood, right?
And they more or less stay with you, backwards and forwards. They pop in and out and stay with you and comfort you and keep you company for more or less the first 2 years.
That's quite a time.
It is quite a time, but they do that for you because they care about you.
And then we have to say goodbye to them?
No, they will escort us into the interior of the heavens.
So the other places to go. This isn't the last stop.
No, the seventh heaven is the lowest heaven. About 6 more higher than that.
Now, is it 2 years in our time or is it 2 years in heaven time?
Time changes when you leave here. So it isn't exactly the same. And as you move through the dimensions of the seventh heaven, time speeds up.
Okay. So what might be 2 years might only feel like a few months.
Yeah, yes. It wouldn't be quite the same as 2 years on Earth's time. Not quite the same.
Right. So is this the place that you call arrivals and departures?
Arrivals and departures is part of the seventh heaven, yes.
But you don't stay the whole time in the arrivals and departures?
No, only
for
one
those
week.
2 years? Oh, one
no,
week?
No, one week is spent in arrivals and departures.
Okay. Now, I understand there's a cleansing that takes place. So when do we get rid of so much of the weight that we're carrying of this previous life?
Once we've gone through the initial death process and we've moved into arrivals and departures and settled in there for a week, on the seventh day, they put back your time clocks so that you're between 24 and 32. That is a big event.
24 and 32 what?
Years of age.
Oh, okay.
So then you're young again.
That's around the age of maturity, actually.
Yes, that's
But it doesn't erase their memories of all the suffering that we have.
Oh, no, it doesn't erase any of the memories. You still have your memories intact. So then you go from there, they move you up to another dimension, and that's when you start getting your healing procedures on your etheric body, on your emotional body, on your mental body, on your astral forms. They all have to be healed. And so you go through these procedures in which you are bathed in wonderful colors, you listen to beautiful sounds, and through these processes, you have a healing process.
And there are also some counselors out there who interview us about our life.
Yes, they do. In the first 2 years, we go through a lot of therapeutic experiences because we have to lighten up. To go into the heavens, the interior of the heavens, the energies are very high. And so we have to raise our vibration from the earthly level. We've got to raise it as high as we can to go into the interior.
But what if we're called back into another lifetime very quickly?
No one is called back that quickly. Absolutely no one.
Okay.
It isn't a question of a fast turnaround. You must go through the procedures.
Well, in saying that, we also know there are always exceptions to the rule, and that we also know more higher plane souls, more advanced souls, take lives quicker. They don't stay in the heavens. They want to advance quicker. They've acknowledged their soul's progression. They know that they're down here for a reason. They want to do that work.
Keep getting back to work.
Yeah, get back to the work. It depends.
They are in a minority.
But we have to acknowledge that minority too. But, you know, for souls who've had a tough life, a difficult life, they usually want to rest. And I don't blame them. For other souls who've maybe had it easy, they don't want to come back too quickly because they know next one might be a tough one. So we're in a melting pot of motivations and how we feel when we're ready to come down to the next life.
Okay, so let's go back to the mechanics of life out there. We know that we can find an environment that's very similar, replica of the environment that we left, and yet we can choose anything. So we might not have liked where we were living and want to create a new paradise. What's the opportunity of that?
I think initially most people would feel comfortable around the surroundings they used to, but to actually start discovering what else exists out there and what they can make of it is something of discovery. So there's a little bit of discovery to go on.
We don't want to decorate so fast.
It's feeling, dipping your toe in, finding out what exists outside your immediate environment, out of your safety space.
Right.
I feel like that what waits for us out there is also very dependent on whether we really want to recreate the lives we've had and just lived, or whether we actually are inquisitive souls and want to discover what exists outside of the life we've lived.
Right. And I guess a lot has to do with our awareness of our own healing and belief in ourselves to trust moving on and not have some survival based on hanging on to the old.
Yes.
And then having these other family members who have moved on, who've been out there a long time, and they come to help out.
Let's face it, you don't have to pay any bills anymore.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, we talked about the possibility of eating food out there. So who's going to serve? Where do you shop for food? Where are the kitchens?
In the heavens, you can eat as much as you like. You can drink as much as you like. You can have anything you wish. But the spirit body has no digestive system.
And so eating isn't worth much.
You're not going to put on weight, so you can eat and drink as much as you like.
So you might do it for the taste.
Yes, but the food that you eat and the drink that you consume, like your etheric body, is phantasmal.
It's an illusion.
It's an illusion, but it feels real. It looks real. It looks exactly the same.
When you've done astral traveling, have you partaken of any food?
No, I really haven't.
But you've seen people eating?
Yes, I have. But I haven't done it myself. I feel no need to.
Okay. You haven't been hungry when you've been out there?
No, I haven't. I've been too busy learning everything.
Okay.
I never have been. It's a curious question. I never have been. I've been too excited finding out about everything.
It must feel strange not to have to breathe.
Very curious thing about the heavens is that you feel exactly the same as you do right now. In your etheric body, even when you're flying around in your light form and you're just a pinpoint of light, in your mind, you think you look the same. You have a head, arms, body, legs, feet, everything. You have that image in your mind. It's not true.
Right, the illusion of you're carrying around the illusion of a body.
Yes.
And does that body need to think it's breathing?
No, you don't even think about that.
Okay, good.
You don't even think about that. But however, the body feels warm.
Mm-hmm.
You feel as if your heart beats. You have the illusion of having the same body that you had before.
Well, let's face it, all of our human experience is helping our beings, our true beings, our soul, to learn and grow. And that experience of physicality, having physical lives, physical life after physical life, is for a deeper purpose.
And that's what we know. That's a reality that we believe represents truth.
So in a funny kind of way, what goes with that is the thought forms and reality we make when we're non-physical beings. We then use our thought forms to create solid realities out of our own solid experience while we're alive, out there. So in a funny kind of way, the more we feel life and the more adept we become at creating how much life we felt and recreating that, very solid, very real constructions with our sense of thought and creation.
And yet some of us are hanging on to old thoughts and creation, and many of us are looking for new and exciting and daring and what's magical out here and how much can we create that's new and otherworldly, other dimensionality, and living in that. That's what my excitement would be for.
I mean, in a funny kind of way, we do that as mediums, going out of our body, going to sleep and going to communicate with higher-minded souls than ourselves to bring back concepts, designs, thoughts, ideas that are far more advanced than we have in the world.
Sure.
And then we can try to bring them into a reality in our physical world.
Right, so we want to connect with higher beings out there who can teach us and demonstrate all kinds of new things.
So I think many people come into a life with a mission. So we're talking about our lives in the heavens and reviewing our lives, but also there's a point when we're ready to come back, and we come back with missions to maybe bring some of that those heavenly qualities back into the world.
And perhaps that helps us make choices to evolve.
Yes, as a human race.
Right. It's like
we can evolve. We're trying to make heaven on earth, essentially.
It sounds good to me.
Yeah.
So what else can you tell us about the mechanics out there?
Well, let's take arrivals and departures, for instance. For the newly arrived soul, they're going to spend the first week on arrivals and departures. They can, during that time, they have a greeter. They have their guardian and guide who will be popping in and out and making sure they have everything they need. They also have their greeter. Every soul is assigned a greeter who will be with them for the first 2 years. And that person oversees everything that they're doing.
Do we already know who that person might be when we get out there? Is that a familiar person to us?
Yes, it's someone that we know from the past or spent previous lives with.
And we're excited to see. What if we look at this person and go, oh no, I'm going to have to spend 2 years with this person?
No. It would have to be someone that you like and that you're comfortable with.
Okay, good.
Playing the role of greeter. However, when you pass over into arrivals and departures, you start living a social life almost immediately. You know, you can go golfing, you can go dancing, you can swim.
That's available at arrivals and departures.
Yes, you can go to the casino if you like to gamble.
And if you're religious, you have your temples and churches.
Of course, you have all those available to you.
Right.
Whatever you wish to do, you do. You want to go on hayride, you can go on a hayride. If you want to go climbing, you can do that.
And what if you're so upset about having died and left your family behind that you're just not interested in anything good out there?
Your family members and your loved ones and the people who greet you, who spent previous lives with you, usually encourage you to be active in that first week. They want to get you acclimatized to the heavens, to the ways of heaven, and they want you involved. So they cajole you into doing things.
And also they can tell you that even though you've left people behind, because nobody ever truly dies, that the people you've left behind will catch up, and then they'll be coming to arrivals and departures where you can meet them.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Actually, there is no real loss when we understand it, but we are dealing with change, and often very big change, to be non-physical, to leave those who are still in their physical lives behind, to move on to the heavens, to be rejoined with people who've already passed away ahead of you, and to be waiting for those who haven't passed away yet. This is the reality we're in, and it might be a difficult one in some degrees, but it's actually quite an amazing one, because we're all watching each other evolve as souls. And
so we understand the story.
Yes, and when we pass over, we review our lives, we see that our lives were supposed to often end at that point, that this is what we'd agreed on in our soul contract, and that point of departure where we pass over, where our lives are ended. We had agreed on that often.
And there's a library that we can go to that we can review our past life in great detail. We can actually go back there.
Once you've gone through arrivals and departures, and you've gone through your first week, and you move up to the next level, that's when you start reviewing your Akashic records.
And you can review every inch of it, right?
As a broad generality, 400 years, yes.
You 400 can, years, so yes. Many lifetimes you can go back.
Quite a few lifetimes,
okay.
Yes.
Exciting.
So you see the natural progression of your own evolution.
Right, and then you see how you've been in other lifetimes with some of the family you've left behind, and you realize
exactly.
The continuity of it all.
Exactly.
Well, when you first pass over, there are some people who greet you, and they seem very familiar to you, but you can't remember who they are. But when you go into your Akashic records, you realize, oh, that's that person in that life. And you then recognize them.
This is the definition of finding a soulmate. A soulmate is often someone, not your divided half, but someone who you've lived many lives with and have a very deep connection. You might have been soldiers on a battlefield, or mother and son, or you might have been sisters. You could have been different roles,
sure.
Best friends.
Sure.
And those relationships after many lives have such depth and meaning.
Right, and once you understand that, then you're not so limited by the smallness of your mind that you feel stuck in.
And really, loss isn't loss, because, you know, someone you deeply love might pass over, but you will be together again.
Sure.
And you will be given many opportunities to live
it's
lives
great.
Again.
And it's great to know that. Now, also, isn't there an energy out there that supports that, like a blissful energy or a good feeling in the air, that, or let's call it air, but that these other dimensions are nicer feeling than it
yes.
is.
Yes, they are very blissful. The higher realms are levels of great bliss and joy.
Okay.
And heavenly harmony, shall we say.
All right. That feels good. Now, I want to talk about something else, since we're talking about heavenly harmony and blissfulness. Is how much sex can you have out there? What's going on?
Let me put it this way. We're in the realm of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. The drugs thing, we can put that to the side. Definitely rock and roll.
Right.
And
out there.
Yeah.
We don't need the drugs anymore.
We don't need the drugs. We don't need those stimulants.
But you can have music.
So many higher, more beautiful stimulants of just being in the heavens.
Sure.
That's the greatest stimulant of just simply being. And exploring.
So there's no sex? What's going on?
Oh, there's definitely sex.
There's two kinds of sex. The first version of sex is called melding, and that's where male and female come together in the same place. The male usually enters the female space, or vice versa.
There's no body that gets you stuck, so you're actually being in the same space.
You're in the same space in your etheric bodies.
Right.
We must both be in the etheric body.
So the bodies are melding, not meeting so much
melding.
As they're actually becoming one.
Yes, it's called melding. And melding is heaven's version of sex. And it's the coming together of the male and female energies, which is, Darren refers to it as rock and roll. And
is that what you were saying, Darren?
Yes.
That's
melding
the rock
is,
and roll.
Melding is rock
things.
And roll. But melding is, as a generality, for those who are of a low vibration. Now, if you're an old soul and you come together with another old soul, then it's called ecstasy.
That sounds great.
Well,
I'm for that. What's the difference between melding and ecstasy?
Well, it's a difference in vibration.
Okay.
Because the lower vibrations are rock and roll, and when the higher vibrations come together, it's a very ecstatic experience. It's hard to put it into words exactly what it is, because it is so amazing. Uh-huh. I don't think we have anything on earth that compares with it.
Well, there are practitioners of esoteric arts using our energy fields to be with another person. And if the two people work on these higher vibrations together, they can have orgasms that go on for days at a time, but it's not a lower vibration. It's not sexual orgasm.
Yes.
It's really that it's a higher frequency that you're joined in together, and it's very ecstatic. There are a lot of people who do that on the earth. So the fact that it goes on out there, and it's fairly normal for people who want to have sex out there to do it that way.
Mm. Of course.
I mean, you can, for instance, just give someone a hug, and the energies that flow between you is essentially, it's like having sex.
There's you know from your own experience, too. You've had an experience.
Let me put it this way, Peter. I've lost my virginity twice. So when I was younger, in my early 20s, I lost my virginity on the astral planes.
To a spirit.
And we had the melding. She entered my space, and it was the thing that I experienced was wonderful, amazing intimacy, great passion, the best sex I've ever had. And then a couple of years later, I lost my physical virginity. And I found that I was shocked by how the physical body got in the way, that I wanted the same level of intimacy and I couldn't have it. And I worked very hard to discover how to have that same intimacy physically. And my vehicle of doing it was looking into my lover's eyes and having that intimacy with eye contact and looking into them and having them look into me. So that's how I broke through to having deeper intimacy with those I'm having sex with, through looking deeper into them.
That sounds great. I like that.
To lose my virginity twice.
It's interesting.
Interesting.
Well, this is so fascinating to talk about how it works out there. And we're only talking about the first plane that we reach. And then there are more planes. Now, Stephanie, you've written two books.
Yes.
And the first book I've read, and I've only read some chapters of your second book. The first book is called Seven Glorious Days in Heaven. And I loved it. There was so much of what we're talking about in that. And so I'm very excited to read your sequel. And I've read some, as I said, and you've sent me some chapters, and they're so fascinating. Now, what is the second book called?
The second book is called The Alchemist and the English Apprentice. And I've written one chapter on ecstasy. So I think the reader will... We'll find
that'll
that
find yeah a lot of readers will buy the book just for that chapter.
Well, that's not a bad reason.
Right.
That's not a bad
but there's
reason.
So much else, and we've had other shows before. We've talked a lot about amazing things that go on out there, and it keeps on giving. It's a bigger world than here.
It's an amazing world.
It's vast.
World within world within worlds, because there are so many multiple dimensions. And each dimension is more exciting than the last one.
I feel like Indiana Jones in this field. I'm always pushing through the wilderness, discovering new tombs and new artifacts all the time.
Out there, exactly. Different secrets that exist.
Through so many different vehicles, whether it's automatic writing or going astral, being taught by Peter and John, with them showing me things, teaching me things. I can go to sleep one night with one perspective, I'll wake up with a totally different perspective, and I'll see so many things very differently.
Yeah.
And it can happen.
We're promoting astral travel now.
They're very exciting.
Everybody should do it as much as possible.
They're very exciting worlds, and they're enchanting.
Right. And you've been out there hundreds of times, thousands of times?
Yes, I'm always going in and out.
Okay.
I love going in and out.
Essentially, we're promoting the world to become more conscious, more wise, more loving, more kind, and promote us to become less materialistic, less selfish, less cruel to each other as a human race. Let go of the violence and start becoming far more aware and allowing of the complexities of each other's and humanity.
I think a lot of our minds are caught in the limitations of this plane, and we don't realize, of course, we fantasize if life could be so much better, because we do come from out there.
Yes.
We do.
And out there is
yes.
better, and we're going back out where there is no crime.
Yes. That's right. That's our natural environment.
But let's use our thought forms to create a better physical reality.
And as you said earlier in the show, that it's our ability to know what's better, to create the intention of evolving here to a better world.
Yes, I mean, how many of us think, oh, the world's a bad place, we don't want it like this? Well, we can't just stop there. We have to know what to replace it with. We have to say, okay, I don't like how the world is, but let me bring something to this world and replace it with something more kind, more intelligent, more progressive, to add to the world so that we can actually make a difference and start changing this planet.
And I think innately a lot of us know that, know the way it is out there, have a sense of the way it should be here if we had heaven on earth.
Let me tell all those astral travelers out there one little trick, okay? And this trick works very well for me. Go to sleep with the intention of learning more about what you want to change. Learn more about it, get a higher perspective, ask for teachers, ask for new perspectives, and then sleep on it. Go out of your body and start asking those questions from those higher-minded masters who know the answers. They won't tell you, they'll let you find out for yourself, but they will guide you to find your answers. And bring it into the world and play your part to making this world a better place.
And on that note, we're really at the end of the show.
Thank you very much,
so,
Peter.
I'm so glad that two of you were here. Stephanie S. Darrell, the author of Seven Glorious Days in Heaven and The Alchemist and The English Apprentice. And Darren Knight.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you. It's so great to talk to you both.
Always a joy.
Yeah. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, H-E-A-R-T, river.org, or 212-222-7748. Lots of classes coming up, a lot of things going on in New York, might be some teleclasses soon. So tune in, check the website, heartriver.org. And thank you so much for listening.